Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I grew up in the Kentish countryside in the 1980s, and I had this mate called Gordon who was properly obsessed with the army and all that stuff, and ever since I could remember, he had been a military nut. He was the type of kid who played with little plastic army men, collected action dolls, and spent his pocket money at the wartime memorabilia shop in town. He had Airfix model kits of 1,000 different tanks and planes that he meticulously glued together in paint. And I tried to make a couple of kits one time and just got glue everywhere, and my paint applications would have made a Warhammer fan weep. Gordon's grandpa Derek was a World War II veteran.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
He lived alone in a little ground floor flat, and Gordon and I would often go visit the old man on a weekend. He was a genuinely lovely fella. Imagine the classic loving grandpa archetype, and that was basically him. My parents and Gordon's parents were friends, and my nan and granddad were friends with Gordon's grandpa Derek. And so it was never considered strange that Gordon would bring his friends over to visit Grandpa Derek, especially me. Now don't worry, this doesn't end with Grandpa Derek being outed as some nunce or anything. He was a lovely man, right up until his death in a nursing home in the 90s. Alzheimer's is a real bummer. Now, the issue you see was with Gordon. It was pretty obvious, even to me as a kid, that Grandpa Derek didn't really like talking about his time in World War II. He especially didn't like how excitable and bloodthirsty Gordon would get when he asked his grandpa repeatedly about those he'd killed. I'm sure Grandpa Derek had lots of thoughts about his grandson's idolation of the war, but he was a loving grandpa who didn't want to upset a little kid, so he just smiled and told whatever stories his PTSD would allow. When the event I'm going to talk about happened, Gordon and I were maybe 10. It was a Saturday, and we'd been to visit Grandpa Derek along with our third friend, Eugene. Eugene wasn't one of Gordon's preferred friends. He kind of tagged along with us and complained about everything, and I understood why Gordon didn't like him, but I did. Gordon was in a mood with me that day for letting Eugene hang out with us, but after we'd visited Grandpa Derek, he kind of perked up. I had no idea why, but I knew that it had something to do with the fact that he'd disappeared off into the storage room in Grandpa Derek's flat while we were there. After Grandpa Derek's, Gordon led us out into the woods to play. We had a sort of tree fort thing that we were building there that summer, and this was the first time showing Eugene. Eugene whined and moaned all the way through the undergrowth, of course, complaining about brambles and thorns and branches and midges and pine cones. When we got there and he saw our cool fort, Eugene got excited and we played soldiers for a bit. Of course it was soldiers. Gordon only ever wanted to play soldiers. Rampaging through the forest with stick guns, pretending to kill each other in a myriad of gruesome ways. And after a while, Gordon called us over and asked if we wanted to see something cool. Of course we did. So he grabbed his backpack, reached into it, and produced two items that forever changed my life. One was a gun, which I would later discover was a Luger PO8, and the other was a grenade. There were always stories in the news about kids finding live grenades in fields or things like that, and we'd even have an assembly about it when a guy had found one near us. Even if we hadn't, though, I would have recognized what it was because Gordon was so obsessed with war and weaponry, so I also immediately recognized the fact that it was missing the pin. I was concerned that this meant that the grenade was live and dangerous. Eugene wasn't just concerned. In that moment, he was petrified. He pointed at the grenade and actually shrieked at Gordon that it was going to explode at any moment, and that Gordon had no idea how dangerous that thing was that he held. He could kill all of us with it. And I'll never forget the smile that crept over Gordon's face. "I know," he said. Eugene and I looked at each other, exchanging a silent agreement not to make any sudden moves. Gordon carefully tucked the pistol into his jacket pocket and gripped the grenade.
"If I press this lever, it'll blow us all up," he said.
Now, being the voice of reason, I told him, "Maybe don't do that." And Eugene just yelled something else. Gordon was looking wistful, talking about how if we blew up, we'd be heroes, dying heroically in battle, he said. I pointed out that it's only a battle if there's an enemy, that it would just be us dying in a stupid accident. Eugene was starting to get frantic, and I could see him glancing over his shoulder like he was getting ready to run. I was genuinely terrified that if he did, Gordon would throw the grenade and just blow us all up. "Please, Gordon," I said. And Gordon gripped the grenade tighter, and now he was talking about honoring his grandpa Derek's fight. "What?" I thought. This kid was mental. And I told him as much, and Gordon just stared at me and stepped forward menacingly. I didn't stop to think. I grabbed the grenade out of his hand and flung it, and then I braced myself for impact. Silence. We all stood there frozen for a moment, and then Gordon started laughing like a maniac.
"It was a model. It's fake."
I stared at him, absolutely astounded and speechless. The whole thing had been a prank. Serious, po-faced Gordon had pretended that he was going to kill us all as a prank. That was awesome. I started laughing too. Eugene didn't really see the funny side, but even he was keeping his calm. I think we were both just relieved that our friend wasn't actually mental and we weren't going to die. I shoved Gordon in the shoulder, kind of just good-naturedly, and he laughed and sort of stumbled backwards. Something fell from his jacket pocket, and I heard the clunk of metal, then a loud, echoing bang that made my ears immediately ring. Gordon's face went white. Eugene crumpled to the ground, almost in slow motion. I turned to look at him, mouth agape. I could see a bloody wound on his forehead. When I had shoved Gordon, the pistol he'd stolen from his grandfather, Derek, had fallen out of his jacket pocket and hit a rock. And as I said, we later found out it was a Luger P-08. Grandpa Derek had kept it ever since the war. He thought it was unloaded and non-functional, so he said anyway, but it turned out it must have just been jammed or hadn't been used in a while. Hitting the rock caused it to discharge, and the angle that it fell meant that it shot Eugene right square in the middle of his forehead. And shockingly, Eugene was fine. The wound looked nasty, but in actual fact, the bullet had grazed him and ricocheted off the hard, bony part of his forehead. It turns out it can actually be quite hard to lethally shoot someone in the head, but nevertheless, Eugene was incredibly, incredibly lucky here. It also turned him into the coolest boy in school, a reputation he maintained from then on. And we're still friends to this day, old geezers ourselves now, I guess, and Gene often jokes that being shot in the head as a kid was the best thing that ever happened to him. Grandpa Derek managed to avoid any real trouble for owning that gun. This was quite a while before UK gun laws became a lot stricter, so he got away with a bit of a telling off from the Rozzers and his daughter, Gordon's mum. Gordon was in the absolute doghouse, though. His parents made him get rid of all of his military models and toys, and they banned us from visiting Grandpa Derek without adult supervision, mostly for Grandpa Derek's protection, really. Thankfully, things ended up okay and Gordon grew up to become normal, a well-rounded adult, and the incident and the punishment absolutely put him off any and all interest in the military, though, and the kid who always insisted that he was going to grow up to be a soldier ended up as a manager at Sainsbury's. Jean and I still keep in touch with him, and Jean takes great delight in never letting Gordon live down the time that he shot him in the head. I had a friend in high school who very nearly ruined my life. Their name was Leo, and they were smart. Genius-level smart. Too smart for his own good, really, which is why he got bored and did things to amuse himself. I hadn't really known him coming up through middle school and most of high school. I was kind of an average, normal kid who was decently okay at school and decently good at football and baseball. Most of my buddies were more jock types, and Leo was a quiet, smart kid who I always just figured was a band geek or a theater kid. Well, he was certainly theatrical anyway. One day in junior year, he just walked up to me, introduced himself, and told me that he was going to become my new best pal. I was kind of amused by this, and I'm a pretty easygoing and placid fella, so I sort of say, sure, why not? From then on, we spent the next year just hanging out, playing video games, going to the mall, fishing, just normal stuff that kids in the 2010s would do. I grew to really like this Leo guy, and he was a bit strange and mysterious, but it didn't really bother me. We'd never hang out at his house, and I never met his family or knew anything about them. He told me he had a younger brother who died, but I later found out that wasn't even true. He had an older sister who was alive. And that was the first weird thing about Leo. Almost everything he told me during the few months that we were friends was some lie. Just completely made up, but in a meaningless way. He told me he lived in one part of town. It turned out to be another. Not for any possible reason either, it just was a part of him amusing himself, I guess. I have no way of knowing exactly the extent of how many lies he told me in that time, but knowing what I know, I'm pretty sure everything he said had a degree of untruth to it. And like I said, Leo would get bored and do kind of insane things just to amuse himself. When all of this was over, he confessed to me that at first, he wanted to see if he could befriend someone and sustain acting like a completely different person to them. Why? Well, he would just say that he was bored. And if this was the extent of it, then it would be a pretty creepy and pointless but ultimately harmless thing. Unfortunately, it didn't stop there. I discovered the following through hindsight, so bear in mind that I didn't know any of this was happening at the time. His project was to steal something from my house every time he visited. It was always something meaningless that we wouldn't notice was gone or wouldn't assume had been stolen. A bottle of bleach, a ceramic banana, a small ornament for my gram's bedroom. My grandma lived with us when I was a high schooler. A pill from a prescription bottle. Various other things I...
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Forget because they were so insignificant. I only know about it because Leo presented them all to me one day. You'll see. His penultimate game was to convince me to be afraid of him. We were in senior year by this point, and he did this by repeatedly dropping hints that he was a serial killer. I didn't work out what some of this meant at the time. He'd tell me that he enjoyed hurting a neighborhood cat, or casually let slip that he'd been following a woman in the dark. Then he started referring to his trophies, and when I asked about them, he became coy and mysterious. And this is when I kind of stopped enjoying hanging out with Leo. I gradually started to drift away from him, and we went on with our lives. Then his final game began. One day I was minding my own business, happily working away in math class when I get called to the office. I had no idea why, of course, so my first thought was something bad had happened at home. This made me anxious and a bit jumpy, which really didn't help, and when I got there, the principal and her secretary were waiting for me, along with a member of the security team. They told me they needed to search my bag and my locker, and to this day I have no idea if they were really allowed to do this, but I had no reason to deny them. First, I emptied out my school bag. Nothing weird to note here, just some books and a pair of gym socks. I remember the principal and the security guard giving each other an odd look. I didn't even think to ask what was going on. I was still generally shell-shocked. Next, they marched me to my locker. They opened it up and searched through everything and again found nothing. And now I finally asked what was up. Sternly, the principal told me that they'd received reports from multiple students about me. Apparently, I'd been talking about a hit list and had confided in a few kids that I had a locker full of firearms at school. Now, of course, all of this was nonsense, and the accusations made me freak out. I broke down in tears there in the hallway. I guess my reaction was so severe that they believed me because the secretary even took me back to the office and made me some tea. I asked who'd accused me because they must be trying to frame me for some reason. The secretary stressed that she couldn't tell me anything, but that it had come from multiple students. And I was so confused. Again, let me remind you that I had no idea about Leo's games at this point. At most, I just thought that he was an unsettling weirdo. A week or so later, I got an apology from the school. They were pretty brash about it, but they said that after further investigation, it turned out that the accusation against me was not credible, and that the students themselves had been misled and thought that they were helping. This last part, in particular, made me extra suspicious and curious, but I was so relieved not to be under suspicion that I just let everything drop. I only found out the truth of everything after graduation. I just started college away in a different state. I had no idea where Leo had gone away to college, and I didn't care to know. I'd always suspected he had something to do with the accusations against me. I'm sure he deliberately waited until we'd gone our separate ways, and he couldn't be traced before emailing him. And like I said before, I was a placid and easygoing kid, but I think I would have kicked the crap out of Leo over this if I'd been able to. I got an email. He sent it to my private college email address, of course, just to flex to show that he could track me down, I'm sure. And that's when he told me the truth about everything, or what I'm supposed to believe is the truth anyway. All the random, meaningless lies he told me, compared to what the truth actually was. A whole bunch of things that were just utterly meaningless. And next, he revealed all the things that he'd stolen from my house. He took in a photograph of all the items. It had a copy of that day's newspaper in the picture, too. Another pathetic little flex, I guess. I'm sure he thought it made him seem cool and sinister that he kept all those items. To me, it just seemed pathetic. The idea of him transporting all this crap to his new life away at college just felt so sad to me. And then, he went on and on about the serial killer stuff. How he'd been trying to scare me and hoped it had worked. And I guess it sort of had, now. And then finally he explained how he managed to convince a bunch of students I was going to do something terrible at school. How he'd managed to work things so that nobody knew the rumors came from him, and everybody involved genuinely thought that they were doing good by reporting me. Then he made sure to add that it was also his doing when I'd been found innocent, because he didn't want me to suffer from being falsely accused. He just wanted me to know that he could. And when I think about it, that's true. It could have been so much worse. If someone sets their mind to ruining you, there's a good chance that they can do some degree, especially when you're a kid and can't necessarily work out how to fight back. If Leo had wanted to make things a lot worse for me back then, he probably could have, because he was literally bored. And that's why I decided not to even reply to his email. let him get it out of his system and forget me. And I never did hear from him again. It's been quite a few years now, but anytime something goes wrong for me, I have to wonder. Anytime something happens that I can't explain, my first thoughts go to Leo. Is he back? Is he screwing with me again? Has he thought of another game? I have no idea what became of Leo since he last emailed me, but I hope he's occupied. I really don't want to find out what happens if he ever gets bored enough to remember me again. The worst friend I ever had was a kid called William. I was kind of forced to be his friend, and we were put together at kindergarten because our moms were friends, and William decided that I was going to be his. I don't mean his friend. I mean his. You see, in his eyes, he owned me. I was a walking, talking, living, breathing toy for William's amusement. And what I mean by that is his favorite game was making me cry. We were like five, and already William knew a dozen ways to pinch, prod, poke, and stab me. And his bullying never got noticed. He was the type who'd reach under the table and pinch you on the soft flesh of your thigh or flick the back of your ear with a rubber band. Because of William, I got a reputation as a crybaby, prone to bursting into tears over nothing. I was too scared of William to tell anyone that he was actually hurting me pretty consistently. Sometimes at recess, he'd make me go behind the school and choke me with my t-shirt collar until I puked. Other times, he would do this burn on my arm, and it felt like the skin was going to split. He pulled my hair out, he'd just prod me with these pins that he had, and I was known as the clumsy kid who was always breaking his toys or tearing his clothes or tripping and crying. But no. Looking back, it was always William. I wish there was a twist that I could add here. And William was my imaginary friend, but he was very real. And this very real, very unpleasant torment continued throughout elementary school. There had been one blissful moment where William's family decided to move away because his stepdad got a promotion. But then that fell through and I was stuck with my bully and tormentor, and it seemed like it would last forever. The wildest part is that William also seemed to actually like me and enjoyed spending time with me. Over the years, he'd made sure that I had no other friends, so back then, I guess I thought this kind of friendship was normal. Looking back now, it fills me with terror, but back then, I genuinely thought William was my friend, and I convinced myself I enjoyed spending time with him in return. I'd invite him over to play most weekends, even though it would inevitably lead to my things getting broken or William somehow getting in trouble with my parents. Occasionally, we would play at William's house. His family was a lot richer than mine. William had a dog, an older sister, and a Nintendo. William would never let me play the Nintendo, but he'd let me watch, always promising that I could get the next turn until inevitably we ran out of time. Another thing William had was bunk beds. This meant on the rare occasion we had a sleepover, it was usually at William's house. Somehow my childish mind would allow itself to be afraid of William at night, so I never wanted to sleep over at his, but occasionally I had no choice because my parents were going away or something. My mom and William's mom were friends, like I said, so William's house was always the first choice if I had to stay overnight somewhere. We were 8 and 9 when this happened. I was the older of us by just a few months, and it was the middle of the night. When I slept over, William let me take that top bunk. And this seemed really exciting to me as someone who didn't have a bunk bed. But later I realized it was because William always slept on the bottom bunk because he was afraid of heights. I woke up to William tugging on my arm. He made me get out of bed and threw water in my face to wake me up. This was typical William fashion. And next he told me we were going to the park. I knew we weren't supposed to go out in the middle of the night, especially not alone at that age, but I really couldn't say no to him. I didn't even have to say anything. He was already reaching to pinch me if I started to protest. Now, this was around May, and it was warm out. I didn't mind too much that William made me wear my pajamas to the park, even though he'd been allowed to dress. And at least he let me wear shoes. At the park near William's house, there was a really tall jungle gym that William never let us play on because he said it was gay. That night, though, it was the focus of his attention. "Climb to the top," he commanded me. Now, I should point out that this was a children's park in the 90s, so there was minimal lighting, and there was one lamp that made things barely visible, but nowhere near enough light to let us play safely on the equipment at night. William didn't care, though. He wanted me to climb to the top of that jungle gym, and by God, was he going to make me do it. Thankfully, I was a pretty agile kid, and the thought of climbing to the top didn't really bother me, even in the dark. Now I climbed up the netting and onto the top bars, knowing it was far easier than facing William's anger. And when I was at the top, William told me to do a handstand. Now, I say I was agile, but I wasn't Spider-Man. William could hurt me as much as he wanted to. I couldn't do something I couldn't do. He knew it, I guess, because when I said no, he just shrugged and turned away. I lost sight of him in that darkness. And then, something hit me in the head, hard. Pain and light flashed before my eyes, and I stumbled backwards, which of course meant that I fell 12 feet to the ground. I slammed into the ground and just felt myself, for lack of a better words, break. I have no idea how else to describe it. It was like a sudden, sharp, cracking ping through my body, and then nothing. I could taste copper, though, and smell it, too. I could feel a wetness around my cheek. Was I crying already? No. I was bleeding from what I'd later discover was a serious skull fracture. I tried crying out for help, but there was no sound coming out of my mouth. I just let out a few wet gasps. I couldn't even move my head or turn to look. And I heard William walking over to me, though, and then he sat down facing me. Why wasn't he getting help? And he proceeds to say, "See? This is what happens when you don't do what I say." Then my supposed best friend in the world went off on some rant about how I always needed to obey him because it would keep me safe. That if I'd just done a handstand, I wouldn't have fallen off the climbing equipment. I remember him rocking back and forth a little as he talked, like he was just in complete shock. And at first I hoped that was the case, but the more he talked, the more I realized that he was just excited to see me broken, bleeding, and, as far as I knew at that time, dying. And that's when the pain kicked in, this sort of white hotness throughout my whole body, so bad that I can't even recall how it felt if I tried. I remember feeling relief, too. If my legs hurt so much, then I couldn't be paralyzed, right? I still couldn't move, though. Not at all. I was starting to swim in and out of consciousness. Meanwhile, William, 8 years old, let me remind you, kept lecturing me about how this was my fault, how I brought this on myself. And in that moment, I finally realized that William might actually, genuinely, let me die. And nearly a whole hour later, that's how long William waited before going to get help. And I actually believe that he was hoping that I'd die so he somehow wouldn't get in trouble. But he didn't. He had no choice but to go and wake his mom and stepdad. I barely remember the paramedics finally getting there, or the trip to the hospital, or the immediate recovery. What I do remember is the relief that people believed me as soon as I told them everything. It all came out. This years of bullying and torment and torture. How William had forced me to climb up that jungle gym and then throw a rock at my head. The rocket hit me square in the temple and was consistent with that projectile, and I later found out that the doctors had already told my parents that it looked like someone had thrown a rock at me, so I guess they already suspected my friend. I'd suffered a broken arm, 2 broken legs, multiple fractured ribs and vertebrae. I required numerous surgeries and still kind of walk with a limp almost decades later. William's family was responsible for all my medical bills, and still, I think my family would have given that kid the death penalty on top of it if they could have. He didn't get sent to juvie or anything, but his mom and stepdad sent him away to some kind of long-term behavioral camp for troubled kids, and apparently he was the youngest kid ever to get sent there. A few years later, William wrote me an apology letter. I didn't even want to read it. My parents let me throw it on a bonfire, and I'm forever grateful to them that they didn't force me to accept his apology, because refusing to do so was an incredibly healing experience for me. I could have never believed his apology was genuine, not after having to lie there bleeding out on the ground as he lectured me about how my fall was my own fault.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Now, I don't know what became of William, and I don't want to know. This is the first time I've talked about the experience in years, and to me, the best revenge on William is to treat him as an insignificant footnote. But, William, if by some chance you're also a Let's Read listener and you hear this, then I want you to know, you almost killed me.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.